Welcome back to The Positive View of Rural. On the line with us today is Lou Nelson. Lou, tell folks who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm Lou Nelson, and I am an Energy Policy Associate at the Center for Rural Affairs. I basically work on energy policy most of the time.
Okay, now see, the rest of us out in the wide world don't think of energy policy as being something that you would have a full-time job in. So tell us, what does that mean? What do you do?
Yeah, definitely. That means, I work on a couple of things. Two of the main things are working on renewable energy policy and on working on infrastructure policy, which mainly revolves around transmission siting. So making sure that the lines that will carry that renewable energy are developed and sited in the way that works best for rural communities.
And so what do you do? Do you sit in your office and write things? Do you email people? Do you go places? What do you do?
I do all of those things. A major thing is just getting the word out about everything. You know, energy policy is a thing that a lot of people don't engage in fairly often. You know, we talk about energy a lot, but we don't engage in it a lot. So a lot of it is just keeping people connected to the issues, making sure they know that, you know, there are things that you can do right in your own backyard that relate to renewable energy, and there are things that you should be involved in, like transmission siting. And that's important to attend events that allow you to, like, provide input or, you know, just learn about what's happening directly from developers or regulators.
See, there is a developer moving around in my general countywide area.
I know. I was just reading about today.
Oh, really? See, this is probably a whole different thing. We'll talk later, you and me. But so that brings up the question. So you said, you know, people should be aware. And so what can we do? The people that are just, we're just a business owner or we just work for a chamber of commerce. What can we do? You mentioned going to public meetings and participating, learning what we can. Are there other things that we can be doing that relate to energy policy?
Yeah, I would say an important thing that, regular folks could do that doesn't require a lot of, you know, calling your congressman, you know, calling a senator, emailing tons of people, is just checking in to see what you can do locally or for your own home or business. We like to talk a lot about energy efficiency, and it's a thing that gets overlooked a lot. When it comes to sort of the big ideas that float around in energy policy, but just finding out ways to cut your energy usage alone, that's huge for, you know, just saving on your monthly energy bill.
Okay, and that ultimately helps reduce the demand or reduce future demand, and that affects energy policy because if with the demand being different, then different things will happen in the future.
Yeah, exactly. If you're using less energy, that means that we have to produce less energy. And that means we can be more picky about the types of energy that we're using.
And oh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And, you know, especially for us, the reason that we love wind energy so much is that sort of generally for rural communities, wind energy is a big draw. You know, it gives property taxes to the, you know, local counties and local communities. It brings new people. I know I've spoken to a couple of wind energy training programs, and the instructors have told me it's amazing because you have kids that come from small towns, and they seem to specifically be going into wind energy technician programs because they like the idea of being able to work on this cool new technology, but also go back to the way they grew up, you know, live in a small town, a thing that they all really like and kind of miss.
Nice. There's a wind energy training program not too far from me, about an hour away in Woodward, Oklahoma, at the High Plains Technology Center. And they were one of the first to start up with that kind of training and the big emphasis on safety training for people to go into that career. And so that's an interesting thing to hear from you. Now, you said that we like to work on, or that you like wind energy, but you said we. So yes. Let's talk about who we is, the Center for Rural Affairs. Where are you located? What area do you serve? And what kind of things, besides wind energy, does the Center for Rural Affairs get involved in?
Well, we're located in Lyons, Nebraska. It's the northeastern part of the state. It's a town of about 851 people. We work on a couple of different areas. We have the program that I'm a part of, which is the policy program, which works on statewide but also national policy. So we'll work on, you know, policy in Nebraska, but also Iowa, Montana, just sort of wherever we can, wherever we see that there's a need. But we also work on national policy as well. We also have farm and community, which works on issues of, you know, food availability and sort of community engagement and inclusiveness. And then we also have REAP, which is a direct service portion that deals with small businesses and serving small businesses.
And that's the direct service of small businesses is primarily within the geographic area
in
Nebraska.
Farm and community and REAP are both primarily Nebraska, I believe.
Okay. I just make that clear so that folks that are listening can figure out where you fit in the grand national landscape of the world. Because Center for Rural Affairs could cover, you know, that could cover a lot of territory.
Yeah, and it definitely does when it comes to policy. You know, it's a lot easier to, when you're not doing that direct service stuff, when you're writing media and when you're submitting official comments, it's a lot easier to go at that larger scale level.
So tell me what other policy kind of things you're watching in the rural world, not necessarily for your job, but what other policies are affecting rural areas in the United States, since that's your area, that you're keeping an eye on?
So, you know, I definitely am excited about smaller scale renewables and the potential that those have for, you know, just communities and just individuals generally. I think we're seeing a big increase in community solar projects here in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting to see happen. It allows people that couldn't put a solar panel on their home to still invest in renewable energy locally, which is a really exciting idea. And, you know, couple that with energy efficiency, which, you know, who doesn't like to save a little bit of money? And that's just a great feeling. So I think programs that make community solar easier, you know, seeing co-ops adopt sort of the community solar model is really exciting, but also seeing that there are loan programs that people can use that will allow them to invest in renewable energy and energy efficiency is also really exciting, and I hope that, you know, rural folks start taking advantage of that. And then the whole reason that we met, Becky, broadband policy is really taking off, and we had two big announcements on that.
Yes. Now, you and I met because we both were going to Washington, D.C. together with the Rural Broadband Alliance, or Rural Broadband Policy Group, get the right name, pardon me, the Rural Broadband Policy Group. And see if I mess that up again. Now, I doubt myself. If I mess that name up again, I will fix it in the show notes. I promise I'll get that correct. At Yale, Casper Altra will let me know if I got that wrong. But we were both in Washington, D.C. We were both there to talk about broadband things. And in particular, we were talking about the slow speeds of broadband in rural areas. And we also talked about whether broadband would get reclassified as a Title II kind of service. So tell us a little bit about broadband speed and how that plays out in your town in Nebraska.
Well, you know, we had an interesting back and forth before we actually did this call where I was worried that we wouldn't be able to Skype just because of our speed at our office in Alliance. We don't have the highest internet speed. I think we're at 5 meg officially. Speed tests don't really bear that out. So we don't have blazing fast speeds in our small Nebraska town.
You know, and then on the other hand, we're all very grateful to have as much speed as we do. But
exactly, yeah. You know, it's better than having sort of the, you know, you think of some of the other alternatives that I know some coworkers have to deal with, which could involve, you know, a wireless hotspot that is actually just your phone, which, you know, using quite a bit of data. People that have to install wireless routers on the top of poles to connect to a wireless router that's I don't even know the actual distance away, but and then satellite internet services, which aren't the most reliable and have plenty of issues themselves. So, we're thankful for our 5 meg cable service, I think, but you wonder what you could do with better service, too.
Absolutely. I happen to have here at my house, I'm in a town of 30 people, but I have 10 megabit service, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. By comparison, and it's just because there happens to be a phone switch in this little tiny town right up Main Street here, that I happen to have that good of service. But we've both been declassified. We are no longer broadband served, you or I, or probably many of you listening, because the new standard is 25 megabit service, which most of us do not have, which was kind of the whole point that the FCC was trying to make, is that the service that we have right now is not capable of carrying on more than 2 Skype conversations in the same building at the same time, or listening to audio through online, or even having 2 things going on. So for what people take for granted in other places, 25 is kind of a bottom end now, and is now the new minimum definition of what qualifies as broadband. So I was actually really pleased to see that, because it frees up some programs that they can use to bring better broadband service to our small rural areas. So I thought it was good that something that we talked about specifically is coming to pass. The other subject that we talked about when we were up there is of whether they would reclassify broadband to be a service that was classified under Title II. And this has turned out to be quite controversial in a lot of ways, but it's kind of like treating broadband like old telephone service, and what kind of regulations there would be about, can you skip an entire town or cherry pick just certain areas that you want to serve, and some other things that had to be done to make sure that telephone service made it everywhere in rural areas, because telephone companies weren't that excited about serving every single customer in far-flung rural areas. And then also the question of how do you extend that in a modern way to broadband service. And I remember we had one very adversarial exchange with an FCC commissioner staff member when he said it would be awful if we reclassified, because it would put a lot of regulation on those services. So I was pleased to see the chairman, when he talked about this, talk about how they're going to modernize those regulations to reflect current services. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about either of those subjects on broadband?
No, you totally summed it up, but there is one thing I'd like to add. If people are interested about this topic and they want a very good read, Chairman Wheeler's op-ed that sort of laid out what he'll likely propose to the rest of the commission is a pretty good example of why reclassification will bring a lot of benefits. His example of just, I mean, do you... what would be the best way to lay out the example between AOL and the company that he had, the startup?
His startup was relying on cable access, and so he had to rely on negotiating basically with each and every single cable company, whereas their competitor, AOL, was going over phone lines, which the FCC at that time had already said must be open to access by anyone. And that difference made the difference between the success and failure of the startup Chairman Wheeler was in and the startup of AOL. So that's a really interesting, and I will make sure everybody, you can see the link to this in the show notes, but Chairman Wheeler from the FCC did explain all about why he's proposing this step. That's great. Thank you for bringing that up. I'll make sure everybody gets a chance to look at that. Are you ready to move on? I heard a thought, I thought.
There was one other thing that I think is exciting about broadband. I think that now that net neutrality, which is, you know, a major reason why we're even talking about Title II reclassification, is, you know, ways that we can ensure net neutrality so that we don't have, you know, pay-to-play sort of service on the internet. Another exciting factor that is sort of popping up now is the issue of municipal broadband. And, you know, you mentioned that you have phone service because you have a phone switch, and that's provided by your local telephone co-op, correct?
Yes.
I think it's really interesting. It's something that I've been digging into more lately. Just, there are a number of states that have laws against municipal broadband, which would be your local, you know, municipality providing broadband to residents.
And it just blows my mind that states have these rules, because I would think you would want everybody you could get to provide the service.
Yeah, completely. And, you know, it's really surprising when you dig into some of these laws. And, you know, we have it in our state. And for those that don't know, Nebraska is also a public power state. So we have a weird utility makeup already. And it seems like public power providers, since they already have, you know, lines around the state, it seems like they would also have an opportunity to sort of provide broadband to communities that don't have a good carrier for broadband, or that, you know, they just aren't profitable enough to extend there. But we have a state law that bars them from providing that service to communities. So yeah, it's kind of mind-boggling when you see some of these state laws that prohibit municipal broadband service, when it just seems like it's a really good solution for communities to, you know, sort of come together and find their own solution to the problem of, you know, we don't have internet service, but look at how great the internet is and what it can do for communities.
And Oklahoma is one of the states that allows municipal broadband. Ponca City, Oklahoma is frequently cited as an example, because not only do they have municipal broadband, they have free Wi-Fi throughout a huge chunk of their town. And while it's not a great enough service to be the backbone for businesses, it's an amazing service that provides another layer of service. It's accessible everywhere in their downtown and then across increasing areas of town. And the entire community has benefited from it. The entire community has a real reputation for innovation, for technology, and for moving things forward. And it comes it's deeply related to the fact that they're offering Wi-Fi. It's chicken and egg, you know, which came first. But the fact that they're doing it shows what a kind of a forward-thinking community they are. I also want to say thank you to you who are listening, because many of you sent stories. When I put out a call and said we were going to DC, you sent me your stories and you told me what broadband means in your community and what issues you're having, and a lot of you are facing big challenges. And what specific stories, and I appreciate you for sending me your stories, because we used those as ammunition when we were in DC. Lou will tell you that I used your stories with a lot of different people. So that was very helpful, and thank you all for sending in your stories. Okay, so let's take a completely different shift and get completely away from policy for a minute. Let's talk, Lou, why are you rural?
Oh, this is, you know, I feel like a lot of my coworkers have a lot more exciting answers than I do. So I grew up in a town that's sort of on the very edge of that rural definition, here in Nebraska. But I went to Wayne, Nebraska, which is the home of Wayne State College, and it's a town of like 5,000, and I just loved living there. A lot. You know, I really like sort of the small town feel that you get, you know, when you see the same people every day and you get to just sort of know each other. And you don't have to be best friends, you know, you just have this closeness that sort of develops that, you know, it's a good feeling to have, and I like that sense of community. My joke response is always that I really hate traffic.
Which is a good response.
Yeah. You know, it's not entirely jokey, because I do like the feeling of being able to just walk down the street to, you know, the grocery store, or to, you know, it's only going to take you 5 minutes to get across. I say 5 minutes. It takes you 2 minutes to get across town, sort of thing. You know, that's not a terrible thing to mention, I guess. It's just so much happens in small towns that is cool and mind-blowing, that, you know, people in small towns have hobbies and, you know, things that they just want to do to improve their communities that we really overlook. But you can do some amazing things in a small town that you could probably do other places, but you just, it's easier to miss them in a big city. Here, you know, you can really get close, and you can learn you know, more about people, why they want to do something and, you know, how they did it. And it's, I think a good sense of community is the best way to put it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's very much about the sense of community. And I think that the factor in small towns that makes that sense that you're talking about of knowing somebody a little deeper, of connecting with them and knowing what their hobbies are and their other interests and the other projects they're doing. In small towns, your neighbor is not just your neighbor, but your neighbor is also related to the person who's going to approve your bank loan, and you know, the person that mows your lawn also has friends on the arts council that you know you deal with them on an arts project. And so you get to know people in an interconnected way and in a multi-layered way. So nobody is ever just this one person. There, you know, you're not just the person I see at the post office. You're also somebody that I see at the community theater. And that multi-layered connection makes for a deeper and stronger connection, I think. And I think that's the sense of deep community that really connects us in small towns.
Oh yeah, totally. I think that hits it right on the nose.
Okay. Well, Lou, tell people where they can find the Center for Rural Affairs and where you are online, if they can connect with you personally, if they have policy questions about energy policy, it may come up, you never know.
Well, you can find us online at cfra.org, and you can follow us on Facebook at the Center for Rural Affairs Facebook page, and I'm sure we have...
Yes.
Twitter handle.
You do. It's at Twitter. It's at CFRA. I'm a big Twitter head. I can't help it.
I know. We talked about this. I'm not a big Twitter user, so that's probably not the best way to get a hold of me.
But if we get to the Center for Rural Affairs website, we can find contact information for you personally.
You definitely can.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for not only taking time to talk with me today, but we had to make 3 or 4 tries at this between the technology, and then I had a problem with my landline, and then so then we're back to Skype, and so we finally got it worked out. I appreciate your patience in making sure that we connected on this, and thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us today.
No problem. Thanks, Becky.